anytime, rain or shine. That's one of the things that's so wonderful about Progressive Radio Network. Because of the archives, you can catch us live when we're actually on air, which is fantastic, on the live stream, or anytime on the archives. And to find our show archives, you go to prn.fm. Rundown on shows to Natural Nurse. That's the name of this show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and it's under N for Natural Nurse. When you click on that, it will open the archives, which, by the way, are fully searchable. So if there's any topic, let's say you're interested in, such as our topic today, cardiovascular wellness, you can just put in heart or cardiovascular or the name of a specific practitioner. Or let's say you'd like to know about herbs or thyroid or children or any kind of topic in natural medicine. We have about 200 shows posted there, and we're so happy to, I can say, welcome all our podcast download participants, because we actually have over 113,000 of you who are downloading our podcast, and we're so happy to have you on board. So you can always go to naturalnurse.com and text us or email us or Facebook us at Facebook The Natural Nurse. Let us know what kind of shows you'd like to hear, and we'd be happy to bring them to you. We also offer herbal certification courses where you can actually get a certificate in natural medicine by participating. And we have many other classes that you can just come and join in on without having to necessarily work towards any certification. That's up to you. So we love to meet you both in face, on ground, and online. Find us at naturalnurse.com. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Perry Frankel, medical doctor. He is a board-certified cardiologist and lipidemiologist. He's been in practice since 1991 and has served as the director of a major echocardiogram and vascular ultrasound laboratory since 1996, which isn't yesterday. He is a recognized national speaker on topics including hyperlipidemia and hypertension, and is also a multi-state diagnostician. Dr. Frankel is a graduate of the Sackler School of Medicine, where he was actually valedictorian in his graduating class. He was chief medical resident at Long Island Jewish Hospital before going into private practice, and he founded Advanced Cardiovascular Diagnostics. Dr. Frankel is affiliated with major hospital centers in the New York area, including St. Francis Hospital, Long Island Jewish, North Shore Health Systems, and Jupiter Medical Center in Florida. And he's also the director of echocardiography and vascular ultrasound. So we are so happy to have Dr. Frankel with us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me on your show, Ellen.
Coming in loud and clear. Now, I think that you have a lot of different interests. For instance, I just read your bio, so you certainly have a very vast array of what I will call conventional medical training that spans many decades. But what brought you to have an interest in more natural, holistic interventions?
Because I got tired of meeting people in the emergency room after they had a stroke or after they had a heart attack, a ruptured aortic aneurysm, a serious fall. I said to myself, it would be nice to save lives and also save money by getting to people much earlier and to prevent disease, not just treat disease.
Well, I want to share with our listeners that I actually personally came in to see you last week, and the reason is that I have been looking for conventionally trained, hospital-associated intervention physicians for my many clients who come to see me for nutrition, and I like them to be followed by a medical person. You also take health insurance, which is a big plus and often not the case with anyone who has any kind of modality that is not mainstream. But I've been getting such good reports about your practice. So I decided to come in and experience it for myself.
Thank you so much. You were a delight to see, and it was so very educational for me.
You know, one of the things I was so interested in is your understanding of a more expanded view of various techniques that are totally non-invasive, like sonograms, for instance. Tell us how you feel about ultrasound.
I think ultrasound is a very non-invasive procedure that is painless, that gives us a lot of information, and ultrasound has expanded the quality dramatically over the years, and I think it's very useful in looking in vascular disease, and heart disease is the number one killer in America, not of men and women. It's not a man's disease. Heart disease kills 10 times as many women as breast cancer each year. It kills double the amount of women as all the cancers stacked on top of each other, which is the number two cause of disease. Stroke is the number three killer in America. And as far as ultrasound is concerned, three-quarters of people that have a stroke are unaware that they have a carotid blockage. So, like I said earlier, what drove me is, what's the point of doing a carotid ultrasound in the emergency room after somebody had a stroke, when one out of three don't survive a stroke, and two out of three still have a disability a year later? The time to do a carotid ultrasound is in a high-risk person, people that have risk factors, which is over 60, or which I'm not far from now, and the risk factors, hypertension, cholesterol, diabetes, overweight, inactivity. So I think ultrasound is a wonderful way you could visualize the carotid, and does somebody have plaque, blockage at all? And if they do have a blockage, is it something minor, less than 50%, but it can go to somebody like you and get the proper nutrition and exercise? Or is it something over 70%, which we got to have an acute intervention to prevent a stroke? And I see this all the time where we pick up less than 50 very commonly, and you get leverage on people where it's an eye-opener, where it's a lot nicer to say to somebody, I'm sorry, you have some plaque, 20, 30, 40%, but the good news is you can do something about it. You can prevent a stroke. So I think also if you look at abdominal aneurysms, another way to – an abdominal aneurysm is means the aorta in the abdomen is more than 3 centimeters. Normally it's less than 3 centimeters. They don't rupture till 5.5 centimeters. I sent two cases – into the city today, to Dr. Gary Giangola, to be fixed because we picked them up because we were looking for it. It's a simple non-invasive measurement of the aorta. When we find it, say, 3.5, 4, we can follow these people for years. Maybe no intervention will ever need to be done, and we get them on prevention again. Keep the blood pressure under control, keep the cholesterol under control, get them on the proper nutrition and exercise, Ellen. So it's sad when two-thirds of people that have ruptured aortic aneurysms are unaware they have an aneurysm. I think knowledge is in power. I think we got to empower and educate our communities. We got to teach patients to advocate for their own well-being and not just depend on us as doctors. And in the appropriate patient, ultrasound is really valuable.
And it seems so much more useful than it's given credit for. And it seems vastly underused. Why do you think that's the case? When it's not everything. It doesn't give you the same information as an MRI, but it does not actually have – it's got an excellent risk-benefit ratio, I would say that, for the information that you do get.
You're totally correct. And the Society of Vascular Surgery advises screenings in people that are over 55, 60, that have risk factors, to look at the carotid, look at the abdominal aorta, and the other place to look for, there's two ways to look, with an ultrasound, looking for plaque in the legs, or there's another test which I'll explain called an ankylobranchial index, because if you look at research, research shows, a big study done in the Journal of the AMA in 2008, basically showing if you have plaque in your legs, you're 3 to 5 times more likely to have it in your heart and your carotids.
Is that what... So-called PAD for our listeners.
Exactly.
I'm going to bring your language down a little bit as we move forward. Because not everybody has the knowledge you know, so we want to explain it simply to our listening audience if they're not familiar.
Yeah, 100% correct. Peripheral artery disease, the same way you could have carotid artery disease blockages in your carotid arteries, the same way you can have coronary artery disease blockages in the coronaries that feed our heart. You can have blockages in the peripheral arteries, the legs, and there's a very big correlation with blockages in the legs and blockages in the heart and the carotids. And the ankle brachial index test is a very good screening test to see if you have blockages in the legs. And I'll explain very simplistically how it works. The pressure in your leg is bigger than your arms. So the pressure in your leg should be at least equal to the pressure in your arms to get the blood circulation through. They put blood pressure cups, three on your leg, and they put one on your arm, and they look at the ratio. Because the leg, again, is bigger than the arm, the ratio of the ankle, so the leg to the arm, should be at least one. If the number is under one, it's abnormal. If the ratio is 0.9, in other words, the pressure of your leg is 90% or less than the pressure in your arm, it's pretty, the study in the Journal of the AMA showed that you are about three times as likely to have a cardiac or carotid event in the next 10 years. And I like to think optimistically, again, it's prevention. If, God forbid, that is abnormal, you say, thank God we looked at that. Now we can actually do things to prevent it from becoming a catastrophic event and save lives, save money.
And so this is called an ABI for peripheral artery disease, and it's called a PAD as well. Now, why is this new information for me? I'm not a cardiovascular specialist, but I do keep up with a lot of the testing that goes on, and it doesn't seem like this is widely used, but yet again, it seems like it's such an excellent risk-benefit ratio. I mean, what's the downside to doing it? You're not injected with radioactive dye. You're not even undergoing any kind of x-ray. So it seems like it should be really standard of practice.
You're 100% correct. The way we use it in medicine, again, if you went to a vascular surgeon and they thought you had a blockage again, disease again, not prevention, disease again, that would be the first test they would do, an ankle brachial index. And if it was abnormal, so it's a widely used test in the vascular surgeon's office. It's not a widely used test in prevention. And if
prevention,
the ABI,
it seems like it makes so much more sense.
You know, and the appropriate patient, 100%, in somebody, the American Diabetes Association, I did the major event I do every year with Jacob Javits with them, and their recommendations are anybody over 50 that has diabetes should have an ABI, and if you're under 50, if you have another risk factor, their recommendation is to do an ABI. I'm looking to do an ABI before you have a catastrophe, in the appropriate patient. We can't afford to do ultrasound and ABIs in the whole community. It wouldn't be cost effective. But if you take people as they get over 50, 55, 60, or they have risk factors, I'll tell you some key numbers. Hypertension is associated with 69% of people that have their first heart attacks. Again, 69% of people that have their first heart attack have hypertension. So hypertension is a bad player. Hypertension is associated with 77% of people that have their first strokes. So if you want to make a dramatic dent in strokes and heart attacks, just control hypertension. And so people that have hypertension, since that puts them at risk for heart attack and strokes, those are the type of people that we want to look if they have blockages. Hypertension is the second biggest reason to have a blockage in the leg. Number one, cause a stroke. If you look at diabetes, again, it's the risk factors again. 86 million Americans have what's called prediabetes. Prediabetes is when your sugar is 101 to 125. Or your three-month average called the hemoglobin A1C, your doctor can actually figure out what your sugar is averaging over 3 months. Instead of one slice of the bread giving you what it was that day, they can look at the whole loaf, what it's been like for 3 months. And if your hemoglobin A1C is over 5'7 to 6'4, or your sugar is 101 to 125, you're considered a pre-diabetic. 86 million Americans have pre-diabetes. A big study, you're talking about prevention again, showed that if you put the pre-diabetics, they took over 3,000 people. And in my own belief is you got to prove it to me. So they took over 3,000 people. They randomized them into three groups. One was placebo, which means they got a fake medicine, nothing. One of them got diabetic medicine called metformin. And the third group, nutrition and exercise. 58% of the patients that underwent nutrition and exercise never became diabetics. You almost got almost 60% of the patients never became diabetics. Only 31% of the patients that were on medicine never became diabetics. So if you look another way, almost 70% of the patients that were put on medicine that were pre-diabetics became full-fledged diabetics. So again, showing in your area, nutrition and exercise in a pre-diabetic can convert them from a pre-diabetic to a normal sugar. And we also have 29 million Americans that have diabetes, and it was 26 million 2 years ago, and the pre-diabetics were 20, it went up 2 million also. So we have an explosion also in children, also in adolescents, and diabetes for your viewers. Your chances of having a heart attack or stroke as a diabetic is equal to somebody that had a heart attack already. Number one cause for dialysis, for kidney failure. Number one cause for losing a leg that's non-traumatic. And number one cause for adult blindness. So if you want to wipe out heart disease, you control hypertension, you control diabetes, and you got to know where you're at. So if you have risk factors such as diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, that's the patients you want to, especially when they have symptoms, you want to look at their carotids, you want to look at their heart, you want to look at their legs, you want to see if they're at risk for aneurysm, and then you want to put them on a program to, if it's nothing severe, nutrition, exercise, medicines have indicated. Again, like you said, I was conventionally trained, but I think nutrition and exercise are a big component of it, especially we were just talking about the diabetes prevention program, and we spend one out of every five healthcare dollars is diabetes related. So if you want to solve the deficit.
What did you just say? That's a big number. Can you repeat that?
Yes, about one out of $5 that we spend in the healthcare are related to diabetes. Because you got to remember that basically you have 6 million that are pre-diabetics, you have 29 million that are diabetics. So if you have 300 million people, you basically have over a third of the population. If you just talk about adults and not children, it's almost half, the population, and it's one of the biggest killers. So if you control that and hypertension and the other one's obesity, we could solve the deficit easily and save lives. So, and again, another way to save lives, I'm speaking to a lot of insurance companies now because I think we're going to be paid for wellness in the future, is let's get the people before they end up in the emergency room. Let's teach people not to be victims. I go all over the communities. I go to South Bronx. I go to Bedford-Stuyvesant. I go to the Far Rockaways. I go to all the different neighborhoods just trying to educate and encourage people and speaking and getting on the radio show with you. It makes me feel great knowing that if we reach one or two, three people out there that make a change and realize that they can make a change and they can prevent a fatality, that's what it's all about.
All right. Well, you know what? We are actually going to take just a little break right here. And then we want to remind our listeners that you are listening right now to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z with our guest, Dr. Perry Frankel, MD. And you can find him at his office. We'll give out the phone number, 516-488-5050. Conveniently located in, is that Lake Success where I came over there?
Yep, exactly.
And right in the New York area. And, of course, he's coming out with a new book shortly. It's not quite out yet, but we'll talk about that when we get back. And it's called Heart to Heart. What a fantastic name. And we're going to take a little break right here. When we come back, we will be continuing our conversation with Dr. Perry Frankel. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen, or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And hello, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I just want to make a statement about our Natural Medicine Chest on soy. One thing we did not include in the taping, but I definitely want to make clear, is that important to be sure you're only using organic soy, because now any other soy that does not say organic soy is going to be genetically modified, which means that it is highly sprayed with very toxic chemicals, including pesticides. So while soy in small amounts can be very, very beneficial, especially to some populations, such as menopausal women, it does need to be organic. And today, we're going to be talking about cardiovascular wellness with our guest, Dr. Perry Frankel. And I do want to remind you, you can always get in touch with us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. In addition, we have lots of on-ground classes. For instance, we have a class coming up in Chinatown where we actually meet in Chinatown and take you on an ethnobotanical journey where you will have a sacred tea ceremony, do qigong in the park, and learn about Chinese herbs. We also have ongoing classes at Restoration Farm, which is a beautiful, tremendous organic farm on Long Island in Bethpage, where we do outside herbal identification. We actually pick plants that grow wild, make them into medicine, and you take home your own herbal constituents, as well as ongoing online classes in herbal and holistic certification. So you can find out more at naturalnurse.com. Today, we are so pleased to have as our guest Dr. Perry Frankel, who is a board-certified cardiologist. We introduced him earlier. He has such a long bio, and he is actually in practice at, Lake Success, New York, not far, if you're listening in New York, at 516-488-5050. He's telling us why he believes in testing that you may not be getting at your conventional cardiologist, and the fact that what he is talking about is fully based in science. That's a very important point about what Dr. Perry Frankel focuses on. So thank you so much, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you again, Karen.
So you were talking about culture-driven nutrition to me when we were in the office. You were saying that that's a real specialty of yours.
Yes, it's something that I think is important to develop. We're in America, in New York, we're a very diverse community, many ethnicities, and we've been in the, you have Caucasians, you have Hispanic, you have Asians, you have Southeast Asians, including the Guyanese, the Indian population, the Bangladesh population we have. And say somebody's a diabetic, or say we find a blockage in the carotid or an aneurysm or in the heart. I can't, say I'm at an Indian temple. I can't just say to them when they're not to eat rice and roti, which is pita bread. So what we've actually in the process of doing now, and it's very exciting, and we've gone into, say, whether it's Hispanic or Asian, and we interview people, and we find the most popular dishes that they eat every day. Say, like an American for breakfast, cereal with berries, or an egg white omelet, and then lunch, say, a salad with grilled chicken. Dinner's chicken, fish with a vegetable, or, you know, like that. We're finding what the Hispanics eat, their main staples, what the Indian population eats. And what we're doing is we've taken the main staples of what they eat. We're working with chefs that are the chef, Karen. It's actually Karen, the same name as you.
No, my name's Ellen. My name's Ellen.
I'm sorry, Ellen. And we've taken them, and what we've done is we've asked Karen, not Ellen, to help us change the roti, pita bread, change the rice, change, like, I'll give you an example. Roti, they use flour. So I said to the community, the Guyanese community, if I put in whole wheat, or what's that, how do you pronounce that new
quinoa? Quinoa?
Yes. Great,
yeah, that's
great.
Choice.
I mean, how do you feel about that? Because
it's a very low carbohydrate, high protein grain that actually has a lot of essential fatty acids. And in addition, I've been using it in my home since my children were born, and my oldest is going to be 40 years old. So I've been using it a long time because one of fantastic things about quinoa is it cooks really quickly. So if people are busy, which everyone is, you can make such a nutritious meal really quickly, and it lasts well in the refrigerator to warm it up again later. So it's a great choice.
And I heard now they make a flour out of it. So what we're trying to do is redesign the roti. They put actually the bleached flour, yeast, and they put lard, so animal fat. So we're redesigning that. We're redesigning the rice dish to include, you know, whole grains. We're taking a lot of the sources where they actually had animal fat and redesigning it. We'll look at the same thing with the Hispanic community, the Caribbean community. And so I can go to those communities when we do workshops and say, hey, I'm not going to take your culture away from you. You're going to be able to have not basically your cake and eat it without eating cake necessarily, but we're teaching that we're finding a way where I'll never get people to change their culture so fast, but if I can get the same type of foods that they eat and stay within their culture, I got a much better chance of getting them to adapt to a lower carb, higher healthier protein, and like you said, things that are high in omega-3s and maybe lower in omega-6s and actually change less salt and less sugar, and that's the type of thing. So we're trying to not just nutrition's just a giant broad term, and we're trying to bring it to make it culture driven. So we bring nutrition that's based on the culture we're going to.
That's a really smart idea. I had a guest on yesterday who's actually a kosher focus to eating. And what she talked about is actually similar to what you're talking about, Dr. Frankel, because a lot of the foods, even though they're kosher, if you buy the packaged kosher foods, they're really full of toxic chemicals, preservatives, additives, and you having even gone to school in Israel, you might have seen some of that, and certainly here in New York, the packaged kosher food. But
sure.
She's talking about taking the concept of kosher, but going with healthy preparations.
Exactly. And I'm meeting, we have a conference call tonight between working as a team between myself, a physician, a nutritionist, and a chef. And trying to come out with recipes and that are culture specific, and we're speaking with some of the major insurance players too. If we could actually get into the culture and actually tweak their meals, I think we can actually, because the Guyanese, the Indian population, Hispanic population, higher rates of diabetes, higher rates of heart disease, and a lot of the foods are high in carbs and high in the bad fats. So we're looking to let them continue eating what they've ate their whole life, but in a healthier fashion.
That's a very good idea, because it would be easier to make that change.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
What's the new research that just came out a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure if you had a chance to review it, where the government is saying that perhaps it's less important in terms of, let's say, someone eating food with cholesterol in terms of matching a higher blood cholesterol number linked to that food. I know they were talking about that eggs might not be as implicated in raising the cholesterol level as they used to believe.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's a good point, and it's a good point there's a lot of misinformation that comes out too. Let me break it down simply so everybody can understand.
That would be great.
75% of the cholesterol that we have in our body is manufactured by our body, by the liver. 25% of the cholesterol in our body is dietary. So if you ate a perfect diet and your body made a lot of cholesterol, you're still going to have a high cholesterol level. The way to, and let me make it simple too, your liver makes the cholesterol. One of the first steps in making cholesterol you need is carbohydrates. So if you don't have carbohydrates, your body, it's hard to make the cholesterol. If you don't have the carbs, you can't make cholesterol. That's going to drive your cholesterol down. So the important point is the dietary component's got to be important, the amount of carbs and things you consume in your diet. because if you consume a high quantity of carbs, the liver can become a very big generator of cholesterol. So even though 25% is dietary, 75% you manufacture, they work together. So if you go on a lower carb diet, it's harder to make cholesterol. And what they were saying, cholesterol is not one of the main steps in making cholesterol.
So confusing thing. So what you just said is so interesting, Dr. Frankel, because what you're saying is you are linking the overconsumption of, let's say, simple carbohydrates, not necessarily vegetables, to increased blood levels of cholesterol, and that might be much more significant, the latest science is showing, than the ingestion of a food that has cholesterol in terms of what you have, in terms of your cholesterol level.
100%.
And that's the thing,
right,
but it's related to what the newest research is showing.
100% right, Ellen. If you look at it, if you look at the American Heart Association diet versus the Mediterranean diet, and they've done many studies looking to see which prevents heart attacks more, the American Heart Association diet always loses. Because what we did when we went on, and I'm not advocating a high saturated fat diet. I think saturated fats should still be low in the diet. But what we did, and you hit on it 100% correctly, Ellen, when we went from a higher fat diet to a low fat diet, we substituted carbs, a high fructose corn syrup, all these things to make it taste good. And that's when diabetes went through the roof, obesity went through the roof. If you look at it, what we really need, it's very simple. We need low saturated fats. We want to have the healthy fats, and you know this stuff a lot better than me. You want the right kind of fats. You want the right kind of carbs. You want to keep the – you can't substitute fats for carbs. And you hit it 100% correctly. Your vegetables are the best carbs you can have.
It's very confusing for lay people because they feel like they're getting all kinds of competing information. For instance, even when we talk about saturated fats, that's becoming a more complex topic because certainly while they can lead to the arteriosclerotic changes that you discussed earlier that you can pick up so well with various sonograms and ultrasound preliminarily, some saturated fats, such as coconut oil. How do you feel about coconut oil? That's a saturated fat that seems to have some cardiovascular protective effects.
Yeah, I think it's mostly the fats that you got to really be careful with are cheeses and meats. And I'm not advocating you can't eat meats. I eat meat, you know what I mean? But I don't eat a lot of meat. You know what I mean? I'm more, you know, so I think there are some types of, listen, we need some saturated fats, and you pointed correctly that make wise choices with your saturated fats. I mean, the American diet isn't high. We don't utilize the coconut, enough. So we're eating, as saturated fats aren't from foods that may be healthy for us and are healthy fats.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's just such a complicated topic, and you're doing such a great job, actually discussing that. Now, you brought up a couple times something that's more of a practical matter, but certainly a big issue for many people, and that's the fact that you are working so hard to have this kind of intervention, such as the diagnostics that you've discussed and the culture-driven nutrition, covered by health insurance. It seems they're very happy to cover are things that relate directly to a prescription pad instead of something that's truly preventative.
And it's still not easy, but they're more. Some of the insurance companies are more open-minded. Health First has been very open-minded with going to the community, educating the community. We still don't get paid for some of these tests if you don't have risk factors and a symptom or something like that. So eventually it would be nice that if somebody had a couple of risk factors, again, we can't afford to test everybody, that it would be part of a workup, like we check cholesterol, just to see how it is. And these tests, if they're normal, they don't have to be repeated every year. Like if you don't have an aneurysm, you don't need to repeat an abdominal sonar for 5 years. But if you could tell two of my patients, we picked up a renal artery aneurysm on a lady about 2 weeks ago, and we picked up on a physician a 6.7 centimeter aneurysm, and remember they ruptured it 5.5, and We picked up at a 42-year-old a 5.2-centimeter aneurysm. We went to study him if he didn't have really high blood pressure, history of smoking, and I heard a murmur. So, you know, and an echo is a sonogram of the heart is another way to look at the beginning of the aorta and make sure it's not enlarged where aneurysms start in the chest. And if you see the aorta is enlarged in any way on an echocardiogram, a sonogram of the heart, then you go and get CAT scans and stuff like that. But the beauty of the ultrasound is there's no radiation. There's no dye ingestion. So you don't have to give IV contrast dye and expose somebody to radiation unless these tests show you to go further.
So it's a wonderful screening tool, non-invasive, non-toxic.
In the appropriate patient, 100%. I want your audience to realize that if you're 40 years old and you have no risk factors, don't run and get all the tests. If you have a strong family history or something, maybe a different point. But in the person that has high blood pressure, remember I said 69% of heart attacks are related to high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, sedentary lifestyle, inactive, overweight, you know, family history. I always tell parents, patients, they say, I don't want to have a heart attack. What can I do? I says, pick your parents wisely.
That's wonderful advice, although, you know, one of those things
hard
like looking in the rearview mirror. You know, we do need to take one more break right here. And when we come back, we will be continuing our interview with Dr. Perry Frankel. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, hoping that you are feeling well. And we're going to listen to some information about all the fantastic shows that they have right here on Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back with more. And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And today we are here with our guest, Dr. Perry Frankel. Dr. Frankel is a board-certified cardiologist, and he is a specialist in echocardiogram and vascular ultrasound. And you can get in touch with him at 516-488-5050. Welcome back, Dr. Frankel, to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you, Ellen, again.
And thank you for, you know, this very deep discussion of some of these fantastic non-invasive tests that you specialize in. Now, you mentioned before the break the abdominal aorta ultrasound, and that's interesting because I noticed that when people first go on Medicare, they actually allow that as a covered expense, but one time.
You're way ahead of the game. I didn't know that till about a year ago. Yes, Medicare, Ellen, allows, because they know it's a big issue. They allow one free screening without risk factors. In men, for sure, and I'm not 100% sure about women, but women, it's more common in men, but it's not just a man's disease, you know, like heart disease. So it is a good thing to ask your doctor when you enter Medicare, you turn 65, to get one free screening. When they say a free screening, they mean most of the time when we order a test for Medicare, again, we're all geared to treating disease, so you got to have the disease. So somebody's really got to have an aneurysm or have symptoms of an aneurysm for us to order it. They don't allow us things for prevention, unfortunately. This is one case where they do. And 1 million Americans have aneurysms, 15,000 to 16,000 rupture every year. Nobody should die of a ruptured aortic aneurysm because, again, they don't rupture till 5.5 or bigger. The other reason we would fix it faster would be that if you see a big change from one year to the other year, and it's not a drastically invasive procedure necessary to fix it electively too. Sometimes, like we put a stent in the coronary arteries, they could put a stent in the abdomen.
Oh, is that so? What usually causes the development of an aortic aneurysm?
It's weakening in the walls of the aorta. So any disease, all the diseases that affect the aorta, just like the carotids that affect the arteries in your body that could weaken the walls, increase it. So smoking, family history, big player in abdominal. Anybody that's on your show now that's listening, Ellen, that has a family, anybody in their family, mother, father, brother, or sister, that had a ruptured aortic aneurysm should definitely get a screen for an aneurysm. Smoking's another one. Hypertension, because remember the pressure. The artery's like a pipe if you have a high pressure. People with coronary artery disease, carotid artery disease, blockages in the, like we spoke about, peripheral artery disease, blockages in the carotid, blockages in the heart. As we get older, those are all risk factors, and that's why Medicare allows one free screening.
And that's even if you don't have, let's say, a prehistory. And then if you do, perhaps they allow, when I say allow, that they'll pay for it. You could always get whatever you want if you want to pay out of pocket.
Of course. And what we do, if people have risk factors, we'll do the abdominal sono. And if it's negative, you could, less than 3 centimeters, we wait 5 years to repeat it. If it's more than 3 centimeters, we get them again. The key is not just doing the ultrasound. The key is doing the ultrasound, then making sure you get them on the right program, controlling their hypertension or whatever their risk factors were. And you get a big leverage on people, I find, whether it's a carotid, you're finding plaque, peripheral artery disease, an abdominal aorta, a small aneurysm. When people hear they have that, they listen, and that's when you can get them on the right nutritional programs, the right exercise programs, because they make a big difference.
Now, what about medication? What if someone doesn't want to change their diet or lifestyle at all? So do the medications also help bring the risk down?
You're controlling the risk factors. If you keep the cholesterol down, if you keep the blood pressure down, if you get them to stop smoking, that definitely decreases it. And at the same time, if somebody's resistant and non-compliant, if you follow it, at least you could fix it before it's a catastrophe. But if somebody's, that's a great question you have on the people that are not willing to go in medicines or want to go in medicines, but are unwilling to go in nutrition and exercise, like you asked.
That I think you probably find quite a number of people. They want you, doc, just give me a pill and fix it, not they have to take action to fix it.
You know what, you're 100% correct. But I find sometimes if you sit down with patients, and that's what we do, advanced cardiovascular diagnostics, we take it to the community. We have my office where patients come from, different areas that we take care of. But what we're doing is we go to a lot of the communities where we're all over Queens, Bronx, Brooklyn. We go to the communities. We have them fill out questionnaires. If they have risk factors, we do the test right then. Because, you see, a lot of times patients aren't going to come to us so fast. But if I'm in their community, I'm a state senator, Comrie, so had a big health fair. We were at the health fair. If I'm there, people are there, and if you could provide the test for them right then and there, we bring basically everything we have in the office and hospital short of a CAT scan and MRI, and we do it to the community. Then we sit down and we go over it with them. You have leverage on them. Then we get them in the exercise nutrition. Or we treat them, obviously if they have high blood pressure and stuff like that, they may need medicines, but nutrition and exercise, if you look at the DASH diet, big effects on hypertension. So I think we can use, between the traditional medicines, like you were speaking about traditional trained doctors, and nutrition and exercise, they work very well together. And sometimes
well, that diet is really fantastic, because the DASH diet, and you can tell us a little bit more about that. We're actually getting towards the end. But the DASH diet is recommended by the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, and the American Cancer Society, because it's like a be well for all illnesses. It's a fantastic recommendation.
You're 100% correct, and it's been shown to help hypertension. Keep it simple. If you take a diet that's high in greens, high in vegetables, moderate fruit, yogurt was in the DASH diet too, you're bringing all the, you're taking like 98% of America, I'm not going to convince to be vegetarian or vegan, but if you bring, like Furman says, you bring the greens, into your life, and Furman would like us all to be vegetarians, but if you bring the greens into your life, you bring moderate fruit into your life, you bring all these healthy things into your life, you're going to lower your blood pressure, you're going to lower your cholesterol, you're going to help with the diabetes, you're going to help with diverticulitis, you're going to help with colon cancer, you're going to help with obesity.
Yeah, it's like the board. So it's amazing because even though you know that various pharmaceuticals are targeted to those different diseases, the DASH diet has shown vast improvements or prevention, which is even better, of every degenerative illness. And I think it's because the mechanism of action of the foods included in this, and this is a whole foods diet. It's not you go buy a chemical prepared thing. You just follow a very simple whole food diet plan. But everything in it is anti-inflammatory. And that's the mechanism. Bringing down that inflammation brings down the risk factors of all of those diseases across the board.
Well, look at the CRP we talked about yesterday, which measures inflammation. If you're doing all those kind of things, you definitely bring down the risk, which you brought a very good point, which is we talk about in a book, real foods. That's what you really want to eat, real foods. And we teach people to read labels. If it has more than five ingredients in there, don't eat it. If it's
wow,
there, it can't pronounce the words, don't eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Those are good things to follow, like read the labels, or better yet, eat things with no labels, like an apple and an avocado and broccoli.
Real
doesn't
foods,
even have
avocados,
a label.
You're 100% correct, real foods, and that's what the DASH diet is. If you look at the DASH diet, the Diabetes Prevention Program with Nutrition and Exercise, we can really imagine cutting diabetes. Dr. Willett, MD, Harvard, showed one simple change in your diet can cut diabetes by 250%. Whole grain. Get rid of enriched whites, enriched white breads, enriched pastas, enriched rice. Put in whole grain. So like you say, if you stay with the basics, that's why the hunter-gatherers years ago, when they had to go get their own meal, they had LDLs that were in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Well, they were also exercising. It doesn't come down. 100%.
and eating the right foods.
Well, that is fantastic. Now, tell us the best way to get in touch with you if somebody was interested in having all these tests done for themselves or their organization or workplace, because I know you're available to travel to do those kinds of places as well.
Well, there's two ways. We have an office in Lake Success, and the best way to get in touch with us here would be 516-488-5050. And if they wanted to get everything done at the same time, we basically are in communities 2 to 3 times a week. And the best way to find out that, two ways, 516-625-4042. That's 516-625-4042. That's the company Advanced Cardiovascular Diagnostics, where we take it to the communities. We offer everything at one time. Or we're also at our website, which is www.advancedcardio.com. Sorry for the long name, the easiest name.
Okay, because you know what? Our show, this show that we just did, is archived, and I put all those connections to contact you right there on our website once the show is archived. So I want to thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Perry Frankel. I know you have an office backed up there waiting for you to attend to all those patients. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to share all that great information with us.
Ellen, thank you so much for having me on your show. Have a great day.
And listeners, we love to bring you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we love to hear from you. Visit us at naturalnurse.com or at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and we'd love to visit with you in person. Join us on an herb walk in Chinatown or outside in the field to gather edible and medicinal plants that grow wild and make them into your own medicine, or invite us to be a speaker at any of your events, and of course, you can come to us as a patient.